Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This episode contains mention of suicide. Listener discretion is advised. Two high-profile inmates could see freedom, while two wrongfully convicted men await long-overdue justice. Plus, movement in two mysteries, a fallen legal titan awaits resentencing, and mysterious sightings keep Congress and the public guessing. This week's episode is Prior Case Updates.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you. We had so many prior case updates. It took up its whole episode.
There's a lot going on. There's never a shortage of true crime, sadly.
No.
And the updates that come along with it.
Yeah, the news keeps newsing in all facets, but these are only prior things we've covered. And one of them, it's happening literally as we record at this moment.
The Menendez resentencing hearing. I'm going to tune in as soon as we're finished to see what's up between that and the Karen Reed trial that has me in a chokehold.
Right, Karen Reed. Then I like the Karen Reed. We get to see cameras. Menendez, we just have to wait until everybody gets out to like old school style of like extra, extra, read all about it.
Which is weird because we saw the original trial. So
right,
why not show this one too?
In full color. Well, yeah, let's dive in. We got a lot of updates.
Well, I'm Christy.
And I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. After more than three decades behind bars, Eric and Lyle Menendez are back in court this week for a pivotal resentencing hearing that could determine their eligibility for parole. As we discussed in episodes 46 and 47 and other prior updates, the brothers were convicted in 1996 for the 1989 murders of their parents, Jose and Kitty Menendez, in their Beverly Hills home. At the time of the crime, Lyle was 21 and Eric was 18.
You just pointed out, too, that now Lyle is 57 and Eric is 54.
Seeing the pictures of them in prison, it's a hard thing. And we've talked about it many times where we can hold two truths at the same time. What they did was heinous. When you know the context of why they did it, it doesn't mean that it's justifiable, but it just gives some context to maybe be a little more forgiving when it comes to they've spent now their entire adult life behind bars, and they're not a threat to the public. The only people that were threatening them were their parents. It's not like they're going to get out and, you know, be a danger to society. And also, I feel like if prison is to rehabilitate people, that they are very good examples of that happening.
Yeah, and that's what a rehabilitation expert was on, I think, one of the LA television stations this morning, kind of giving his opinion on it, and was like, what's the purpose of prison? And he's like, "What?" I believe it was Lyle went on to get a bachelor's degree. And this man explained that he's like the spearhead. This guy that was being interviewed is spearheading an initiative to get currently incarcerated people bachelor's degrees, because he said the recidivism rate for someone who comes out of incarceration with a bachelor's degree is like close to zero. He's like, it's way less than 5%. So the idea that what's the point of jail, and it's, well, we can just keep you in as long as we want because that's what we want, versus we are making you a better person, a more productive member of society, so you can go out and make the world a better place. And that's, we'll see about this risk assessment. Are they a risk?
And I would argue if you keep people in prison and do nothing to help them, you're making them actually worse. Because right? Now they've been in one of the most terrible environments somebody can be in, and they still have all the issues that they had that got them there in the first place.
Right. And nothing is, no movement forward.
Mm-hmm. A recent risk assessment by the California Board of Patrol hearings has determined that the brothers pose a, quote, moderate risk to public safety if released. Commissioned by Governor Gavin Newsom as part of a clemency review, the assessment highlighted several concerns. Eric was found in possession of a contraband cell phone as recently as January of 2025 during the ongoing resentencing process. The report also noted that Eric had previously engaged in activities such as drug trading and assisting inmates in committing tax fraud. Lyle was described as exhibiting, quote, narcissistic tendencies. Los Angeles County District Attorney Nathan Hochman emphasized these findings, stating,
the issue is not never for the resentencing. It's not yet.
So what do we need to happen for it to be time?
He's extremely obsessed with, and he's said it in like five different interviews and in the, he's just like, they have to take accountability. They have to take accountability. And to me, it's giving the parent or step parent who's like, you just have to tell me that you stole this thing.
It's
just
giving say you JD Vance going, you haven't even told us thank you during this whole meeting.
Yeah, his whole obsession is he's like, they have to apologize and say sorry for what they've done and admit the real reason why they did it. And they're saying, this is the reason why we did it. And he's saying, well, nuh-uh, the real reason why you did it is because you're cold-blooded killers and you just wanted to do it. And so I think it's like an impasse where he wants to look, this district attorney wants to look like he's, I'm not a monster. I'm saying I'm happy to let them out once they say what they did. And they're like, we're telling the truth and it's not what you require of us. And so he's kind of putting them into a technicality.
And you can't tell somebody, no, that's not the truth because you're not them. So now you're just wanting them to say what you want to hear in order to, and that's not the truth either.
Yeah, that's his argument. He's like, you got to say, I did it for this reason that makes me the district
attorney happy.
And what
is his reason? Just that we're cold-blooded killers, not that we were abused for our entire lives?
Yeah, I think he is separating that, and he's like, the abuse had nothing to do with it. On the stand, they were asked, why did you do it? And on the stand, they said, we were afraid our parents were going to kill us. And then as recently, that's sort of been the story that continued until this newly surfaced evidence came out.
Well, they were worried their parents were going to kill them because of all of the abuse that they had suffered. So defense attorney Mark Garagos contested the inclusion of the risk assessment in the resentencing hearing, arguing that it undermines the brothers' decades of rehabilitation. He noted that Eric had only one write-up for violence 25 years ago, and Lyle had none. Garagos argued at a press conference that in cases like this, where the prior DA initiated the resentencing, the standard is whether the defendants are likely to commit a super strike crime, a term under California law that includes murder, rape, and assault with a deadly weapon. Garagos said a smuggled cell phone doesn't fit the bill.
Yeah, so his attorney's like, they're trying to say they're all at risk of doing crimes. And he's like, he had a cell phone when he wasn't supposed to. Now, Nathan Hochman's argument is, you were in the middle of a resentencing process. Why do you need a contraband cell phone that's not being monitored by the Department of Corrections like any other conversations would be? So I think attributing kind of nefarious intent to what I think everybody wants a cell phone. And Garagos is like, at no point does a risk assessment go, they seem like they're going to choke the next person they see. It's kind of like, well, they did this thing that was kind of shitty this many years ago and this thing that's kind of a breaking of the rules. So the idea is like, they're not like animals waiting to get out to do another like violent crime.
Judge Michael Jessic acknowledged the assessment's findings but considered them preliminary. He ruled that while the information could be taken into account, the psychologists who conducted the evaluations would not be subject to cross-examination during the resentencing hearing. That two-day hearing, scheduled for May 13th and 14th in Los Angeles, follows years of legal battles and recent delays due to wildfires and administrative changes. The brother's attorney is expected to present new evidence, including claims of long-term sexual abuse by their father, supported by a letter Eric wrote in 1988 and allegations from former Menudo member Rory Rosello. Garagos plans to call several witnesses, including family members and correctional officers, to testify about the brothers' rehabilitation efforts during their incarceration. The brothers will appear via Zoom and are not expected to testify. No cameras are allowed in the courtroom.
And they said they were only letting 16 members of the public in, and it was determined by a lottery system.
That's how the Karen Reed trial is, too.
Yeah.
Because it's such a small courtroom, and it's a high-profile case. And I imagine the family gets first dibs.
Yeah, separately from the family. And I think it's like, because some people will pay people to wait in line mm-hmm. for hours overnight. So a lottery is probably a more fair way to go.
Former Los Angeles County District Attorney George Gascon had recommended resentencing the brothers to 50 years to life, citing their youth at the time of the crime and their rehabilitation in prison. However, current District Attorney Nathan Hochman opposes this move, arguing at a press conference that the brothers are not ready for resentencing at this time.
Because they have not engaged in the full panoply of admissions of their criminal conduct.
He cited statements as late as October 2024, in which Eric and Lyle claimed the murders were self-defense, based on fear that their parents would kill them.
And you're right, I think he's splitting hairs, kind of going, well, the abuse stuff is separate, and the Garagos are like, no, it's all part of one larger, the state of the house as they were being raised.
Yeah, it's the motive. I mean, it's the same with Murdoch. You couldn't not bring in the financial crimes for the motive for murder because they were all intertwined together.
And especially this evidence that was not seen by the original trial.
I'll be interested to see what the new evidence is, definitely. Hochman explained at the press conference before the first day of the hearing began that three options are on the table. One, no resentencing at all. Two, resentencing on Jose's murder only, which would keep the men in prison with no chance for parole for Kitty's murder. Or three, resentencing that would make them eligible for parole. Only the third option would see the brothers' case sent to the parole board for assessment on release. Hochman said the DA's office prefers the first option for now, but that could change if the brothers take full responsibility for their crimes. This is just like a dick swinging contest at this time where this guy just has to hear. It's just a power move.
Yeah, he held like a 20-minute press conference where he just was, like you said, it seems like it's a look at me and look what I'm doing and I'm this big hero and kind of making a mountain out of a molehill. He's like, they're monsters. Didn't you see this risk report that said he had a cell phone? Who knows what they're capable of? It's like, well, I think we know because we heard from him. But the look on his face when he was like, well, we prefer no resentencing at all, but that's okay if they just want to resentence Jose's murders because they'll still be, he's like, there's two convictions here. And if the sexual abuse of evidence only goes to Jose's, I think old Hochman thinks he's found a loophole and he's like, oh, well, happily, yeah, we'll agree to resentencing on Jose's murder, but not Kitty's because you are not alleging that she was part of this. Therefore, that murder conviction stands and there should be no reduction in charges down to manslaughter or anything like that. You killed her in cold blood.
And then at that point, what's the point? Because they're still in prison.
No point. And that's exactly right. So they would. And so I think Hochman's like, well, that would be OK. He's like, we think no resentencing at all, but we're happy if it's only on one. I'm like, I'm sure you fucking are.
Hochman also emphasized that Governor Newsom could choose to release him at any time. The judge's decision this week could lead to immediate parole eligibility, pending further review by the state parole board. If not, the final hearing on the risk assessment is scheduled for June 13th, 2025. Governor Newsom has stated that he will make a decision regarding clemency for the Menendez brothers after reviewing the completed assessment.
So that's even if this resentencing hearing does not go their way, Newsom could still offer clemency and either resentence them himself or let them loose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when the whole family is on the side of please let them come home. Mm-hmm. That's very telling and powerful too. Hopefully they allow, you know, the family to make some statements at court to help with that.
Yeah, I believe 7 family members will be testifying at the 2-day hearing, but it hasn't. I think, you know, we'll just see who testifies, but that's what the initial filings make it look like. So there's some on the list. So
it does look not great that they also killed their mom.
Yes.
However, I believe she did know about it. I don't know if she was also contributing to the abuse, but by not protecting them, she was allowing it at the very least.
And I think that was some of the allegations. It came up in one of the trials or like evidence. I don't know if it was allowed in the trials. We talked about it in the episode, though, where like he would drag them into the room, one of them even, and would like she would hear the screams or she would close the door and walk away. So that was kind of the allegations. She was complicit either by inaction or by overt action, which is, I'm going to close the door and let you off to it. But Hockman is very hung up, which I mean, it is a very brutal, graphic murder. It is. I've seen the crime scene photos. Don't look them up. It's horrifying.
They're terrible.
And Hockman, like in this 20-minute press conference before the resentencing hearing began today, was just like hammering home. Like he's like, they specifically describing the actions that the brothers did. And he's like, they shot their dad in the back of the head and their mom. And it's like, he was really wanting to, for almost like shock value, I guess. I mean, on the one hand, that is the truth of what they did. But and it is shocking. But I think on the other hand, it's interesting that he wants to emphasize that violence, but then he wants to omit entirely or downplay the violence that was they claim and now have evidence supporting. And I think that's the evidence is going to be the letter from Eric, as well as the testimony or the allegations from the Menudo member. Mm-hmm. But like, how are you emphasizing one horrible violence and downplaying the other? It's like, if we're going to look at it all, put it all out there and let the judge look at it all and then consider it given that, because the jury wasn't allowed to consider those things.
Yeah. It's a weird feather in his cap that he's choosing this hill to die on. And it seems like he just doesn't want to do what the previous DA did, just for the sake of making his own decision about it.
That's what it seems like. And he keeps being like, well, Governor Newsom can do whatever he wants whenever he wants. Why doesn't he do anything? Why does it all fall on me? I'm like, because the person that had your office before was like, we should look at this.
Mm-hmm.
And like how things didn't change except for a single election.
What an election.
Right, in many ways. Sinister Hood will be right back. Summer is just around the corner and the folks at Mint Mobile have a hot take. Getting a summer bod is out. Getting your savings bod is in. This spring and summer, we want skimpy wireless bills and fat wallets. With premium wireless plans for just $15 a month, you can have both without breaking a sweat or the bank. Mint Mobile is super easy to switch to. Their service is fast, no drop calls. It's everything you want. And you're like, why would I pay more for something that's not even going to be as good as this?
There's really no reason. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts.
They really could not make it easier. I was nervous when signing up and Paris was like, you do not need me. This is very easy to do. And like I said, as long as you got high speed, you know, the data and the call, it's like everything you need, and why pay more?
There's no reason to. Once again, this year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get your summer savings and shop premium wireless plans at mintmobile.com/sinisterhood. That's mintmobile.com/sinisterhood.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month 5-gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
Well, now an update in one of aviation's most enduring mysteries. In March of 2024, when we last covered MH370, in episodes 281 and 282, Ocean Infinity, a marine robotics company, proposed a new search for the doomed flight. Their proposed plan focused on a 15,000 square kilometer area in the southern Indian Ocean. The Malaysian government agreed in principle to this no-find, no-fee arrangement in December, with a $70 million payment contingent upon locating the wreckage. Final approval came in March of 2025, and the search commenced shortly thereafter. However, less than 6 weeks after it began, the efforts have once again been suspended. Ocean Infinity temporarily called off the search due to worsening seasonal weather conditions in the southern Indian Ocean. Malaysia's Transport Minister, Anthony Loke, stated that the search would resume at the end of the year, when conditions are more favorable, saying,
"Right now, it's not the season."
This recent attempt aimed to scour 5,800 square miles of the southern Indian Ocean based on the latest data. This effort rekindled hope among the families of the 239 people who were on board MH370 when it vanished on March 8, 2014. during a flight from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. 11 years later, loved ones remain desperate for answers. On the most recent anniversary, mourners gathered in Beijing, shouting,
"Give us back our loved ones."
Some held signs that asked,
"When will the 11 years of waiting and torment end?"
Well, this is a tricky thing to have. I mean,
I know.
No, the ocean, nobody can, you know, you can't fight with Mother Nature.
And that part of the ocean, like we talked about in the episodes, is just so daunting. Not to map it, much less go out there and actually, and even though they're like unmanned rover drones, I mean, they still have to get launched from a ship that stays nearby and everything. And it's an expensive endeavor. I mean, I think you're doing it for two reasons. Ocean Infinity, we all now know this name of this company. We wouldn't otherwise know. But I think you want to give something back to these folks. But also, there is a payment that is involved that I'm sure will only go to offset like extreme costs, because the government's not paying any upfront costs. But it's, you don't want to go out there and say, well, we didn't find it. And really, you could have found it because the waves were so big. It's like, you want them to search, but you want the conditions to be right so that it's not wasted effort and go, yeah, we've already searched that area.
Yeah. And because that area is so tumultuous, who knows where the wreckage could be, if that's, you know, where it did go down.
Or where, yeah, it might have where moved, it ended or up. If it's down in there, all those underwater mountain ranges and stuff. Like, it is a lot. So, yeah, I'd probably wait until it's the safest possible time, just given where it's at.
Well, hopefully they get some answers, because 11 years is a very long time. At the same time, it's one of those things where, like, it's, you can only do what you can do given how the whole thing happened.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and where it happened.
And why, and like on purposely, we think, at least I think, being choosing that area for this purpose of will never be found.
I just read an unfortunate article yesterday. A German international plane, German Wings Flight 9525, crashed on March 24th. And it was an intentional flying right into the Alps.
Oh, my God.
The co-pilot locked the pilot out of the cockpit. And I have not listened to the black box footage, but they did find it, so they know that they were trying to break down the door and get in there to him. The pilot inside, there was never another word from him, but apparently his doctor had recently said he was not fit to fly due to suicidal ideation and depression, and he had kept that from his employers.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's why, at least in the U.S., I know you have to go undergo so many physicals and exams and stuff like that. But the problem is, I think, knowing that if that will get reported to your employer, we talked about that in the MH370 episode, you're like, I'm not going to tell them, you know, because I might lose my job. God.
It's horrifying.
It really is.
The black box picked up the screaming just seconds before crashing into the mountains at 430 miles per hour.
Yeah, because I think you look out the window and see. Oh,
yeah. You're like, you hear the main pilot is banging on the cockpit saying, open the goddamn door, over and over. And everyone's trying to get in there. Mm-hmm. He'd done something where it basically overrides any ability from someone from the outside to get in. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But he had told a previous girlfriend, one day I'm going to do something that everyone in the world will know my name. If someone ever says that to you,
immediately,
it's usually not they're going to cure cancer. They're not going to do something great. It's very, she said, I didn't know what it meant then, but now I see that, you know, he was planning something or waiting for an opportunity, I guess.
In hindsight.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
To take that many people with you is beyond deplorable. I don't even, it's a mindset that I can't really try to even get into because it's so dark. But it also just, once again, makes you realize, like, you get on a plane and you're just hoping that everybody's cool and gonna do what they're supposed to do and get you there safely. And sadly, sometimes that is just not the case, and it's no fault of any of the passengers.
Mm-hmm. And it's the question becomes, what are we doing to ensure that the people in whose lives we are putting our, or in whose hands we are putting our lives, are the people that we should be doing that mm-hmm. for? No, without any spoilers, the latest season of The Rehearsal is, with the Nathan Fielder show on HBO, is centered around cockpit dynamics between pilots and co-pilots. And it seems like, given that, as well as MH370, it seems like an area that is ripe for investigation, whether it is figuring out ways that nobody's ever left alone in a cockpit, or if they are, the door can't get unlocked, or if they say something, or they should say something and they're not. I think aviation as a whole could use a little bit more focus on that type of communication and early intervention versus, like, I don't know what his mental state is. Well, let's saddle up, buddy. Let's take off. And it's like, sometimes you don't even, that's the first time you're meeting the person that's your first officer, or vice versa. If you're the first officer, you're like, this captain's been at it for 30 years, like MH370. Yeah. So
surely he knows what he's doing. He does too well. Yeah. And that was the problem.
Yeah, check the flight sim data from Microsoft Flight Simulator. Well, let's keep an eye out for when they resume the searches and hopefully find something so that these families have answers.
In Ohio, an update in the saga of Tommy Thompson, the deep sea treasure hunter who discovered the fabled ship of gold in 1988. As discussed in episode 310, Thompson and his team discovered the SS Central America 7,000 feet below the ocean surface, where it sank in 1857, while carrying 30,000 pounds of gold. The ship contained what is believed to be the largest collection of lost gold in American history. Thompson was jailed in 2015 for civil contempt after refusing to reveal the whereabouts of 500 missing gold coins minted from that haul. Now, nearly a decade later, U.S. District Judge Algernon Marbley ruled that continued incarceration won't compel him to talk. The judge wrote in his ruling that the court was
no longer convinced that further incarceration is likely to coerce compliance.
In his ruling, Marbley ended Thompson's civil contempt and assessed his total fine at $3,335,000, based on a calculation of $1,000 per day for each day he refused to reveal the loot's whereabouts. He has previously claimed that the coins, valued at about $2.5 million, were turned over to a trust in Belize, but has refused to provide details.
Well, now the contempt fine is more than what the coins were worth.
Now you owe money somehow. Yeah.
You should have spoke up.
While Thompson's civil contempt term is over, that doesn't mean he's getting out of jail right away. He will remain behind bars to begin serving a 2-year sentence that had previously been delayed by the contempt issue. That sentence stems from his refusal to attend a 2012 hearing to discuss the coin's location. He skipped the hearing and went on the run for 3 years before being caught in a Florida hotel room. He has been held in jail in civil contempt until this ruling.
Yeah, it's wild. They've basically said, we'll let you out as soon as you tell us where the coins are. And you and I said it in that episode. We're like, what if he just he waits out the court, and he's done it. He's waited out the court. He's done it.
And now he owes them money.
Exactly.
This is kind of like the DA for the Menendez. It's like, well, if you want to tell us what you did wrong and how you did, it's like, why do we all need this admission of something to make yourself feel like you've conquered this other person, like you've won? It just seems like a pissing contest.
Right. And in this case, it was like there was the whole discussion about who was owed what because of the investors and all that. But meanwhile, chunks of the gold have been sold at auction for $2 million, $8 million here and there. So I don't know. However, when this guy gets out in 2 years, let's just say that he has the coins hidden. Don't you think that you're going to be watched, and that the second you slide a doubloon across the table at a Chili's bar for your Presidente margarita, that they're not going to swarm on you? Like, you're going to, you have to sell them somehow, or derive value somewhere. I guess he thinks probably he'll go out of the country.
Yeah, and I would assume. They're still flee the country to wherever they're probably stashed.
Belize. I'm like, yeah, he told us Belize, but really he meant Berlin.
Perhaps so. Well, I think he's entitled to keep it personally.
Right. I mean, he found it. What the hell? But yeah, I for him, though, he's been just buckled in. So at least there's an end in sight. You've been in there 10 years with no out. And now finally they're like, all right, 2 more years.
At this point, You're in for a penny, you're in for a pound.
Right? He's like, I'll die here. Sinister Hood will be right back.
Bad habits often usually lead to bad outcomes, but in real life, it doesn't have to be that way. That's where Fume comes in.
Fume is a flavored air device, not a vape, and definitely not a pipe, that gives you a fresh way to take control of your habits. With flavors like crisp mint, peach blush, and cinnamon hearts, it's the smarter, guilt-free alternative. Fume fills the void ditching a bad habit can leave. It uses no batteries, no nicotine, and no vapor, so you can use it anywhere.
It also looks super cool. It's very pretty wood. It's got a nice heft to it. Comes with a bunch of things that you can fidget with, which if you're trying to break a habit, that is often very helpful. And a little stand, so you can just sit in on your desk. People are going to be like, what's that cool thing? And then because you can use it anywhere, you can just be like, oh, this is just my peach blush fume.
Mm-hmm. And then somebody else is going to want to take a suck of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to decide how generous are you feeling?
Yeah.
But you can be generous.
Then it's up to you from there. Fume has already helped over 400,000 people take steps toward better habits. And now it's your turn. Use our code CREEPY to get a free gift with your journey pack.
Head to tryfume.com. That's tryfume.com. Use code CREEPY to claim this limited time offer today.
Moving now to Florida, where a decades-old injustice is getting renewed attention. The Sunshine State appears poised to amend its restrictive compensation law for the wrongfully convicted, a move that could finally offer restitution to exonerees like Clemente Aguirre, subject of episode 149. In 2018, Aguirre was exonerated after spending 14 years in prison, much of it on death row, for a double murder he did not commit. Despite his exoneration, Florida's 2008 Victims of Wrongful Incarceration Compensation Act denied him any funds. While Florida technically offers up to $50,000 per year of wrongful incarceration, only 5 out of 91 exonerated people since 1989 have received compensation, largely due to two stringent provisions, a 90-day filing deadline and a, quote, clean hands clause, barring individuals with prior unrelated convictions from eligibility. This provision disqualifies applicants who have any prior felony. One extreme example is the case of William Michael Dillon. Wrongfully imprisoned for 26 years, Dillon was excluded from compensation because of a decades-old Quaalude possession charge.
Quaalude tells you how long ago it was.
Yeah, that was but the 80s, I imagine.
Right? 5 out of 91 people. Like, that's just
staggering.
You're passing a law to say you have a law and be like, we'll say we have one and then never pay out. Yeah,
but we'll put in this stipulation that's going to prevent almost everybody from qualifying.
Because guess who gets picked up on wrongful conviction charges? It's not nuns. It's not professors. They oftentimes pick up people who already have touched the criminal justice system somehow, even if it was years prior. So interesting. Let's just add that in. If you've ever been convicted of anything, you don't get any money. Sorry for the 26 years we stole.
Yeah. I don't feel like it's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
A new bill led by Republican Representative Tracy Koster seeks to eliminate this provision and extend the application window from 90 days to 2 years. The estimated total cost to the state is just $15 million. The legislation was passed unanimously by both chambers of the Florida legislature. In addition to eliminating the clean hands provision and extending the filing deadline, it also includes a retroactive window allowing previously ineligible exonerees to apply for compensation by July 1st of 2027.
And that was the Clemente's issue was when as soon as he was exonerated and released, the state on purpose notified immigrations to get him ensnared in an ice hold, which then his attorneys worked to get him out of. But while he was ensnared in this ice hold, he was unable to apply for the compensation. So then he gets out and is like, okay, well, now I'm going to get my 14 years back. And they're like, nope, sorry, you missed it. Where were you? We wonder where you were and why you didn't apply. And he's like, because you fucking locked me up.
And I imagine that's going to be happening a lot more with ICE stuff too.
Yeah. Luckily, now they have 2 years to try to apply.
No matter how much money they're giving them per year that they were wrongfully incarcerated, it's not going to make up for the horrors that they experienced on death row for 14 years.
No, and if you do the math, $50,000 a year up to $2 million, and it's like, well, then that's a cut. You know, it's not like anybody's like, well, they're making these huge windfalls. It's like, I wouldn't take $2 million for 2.5 decades of my life.
No, hell no. No, I don't know that I would take any amount of money for that much life of my life being spent behind bars.
I mean, not just your own freedom, but just everything you miss out on, yeah. On having kids, raising kids if you already have them, like losing your parents, caring for your parents, stuff like that, that is just immeasurable financially. It's like we do have to give them money because they also aren't earning during those years, mm-hmm. and don't have savings and can't buy a house, buy a car, et cetera. But it's bad enough that they only get $50,000 a year. But to deny what seems like on purpose, most everyone is beyond.
Yeah. On a recent episode of Wrongful Conviction with Jason Flom, Clemente and his attorney Maria De Liberato described the toll the incarceration had on his life and the difficulty of applying for compensation. De Liberato urged community members to donate what they can to help support Clemente. We've included his fundraiser link in the show notes. The bill now awaits Governor Ron DeSantis' signature.
Let's hope he signs it, because it was a bipartisan effort to pass it. So surely he's not going to find a reason not to. But I also don't put anything past him.
Yeah, I don't use surely with him.
Right. Old twinkle toes and his high heels. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll hope
his lifts.
His lady lifts. Well, we hope that he signs it, because he it's like you could do one good thing like this. Again, this is like bipartisan. It's justice. It is like, yeah. It is the right thing to do.
For sure.
It's not like, oh, well, we're going to. If you want to be tough on crime and be like, we're compensating criminals. It's like, these are people that were snatched off the street.
Yeah. A newly filed friend of the court brief is renewing hope in another wrongful conviction case. Taforis Johnson from episode 318 has spent over 25 years on death row in Alabama. 1995 killing of Deputy William Hardy, a crime he says he didn't commit. His attorneys filed an additional appeal in November of 2024. Even with the current district attorney expressing doubts about his case, the state attorney general insists that DeForest should be executed. Now, 10 former prosecutors, including Alabama's former attorney general and U.S. Senator Doug Jones, have filed an amicus brief urging a new trial. The brief reads in part,
"When a prosecutor takes the extraordinary step of reexamining a previous conviction to assess its validity, if the prosecutor concludes that the conviction cannot stand, the conclusion should be given substantial deference."
There's no physical evidence linking DeForest to the crime, and no eyewitness testimony. Former Alabama Lieutenant Governor Bill Baxley, who co-signed the brief, told the Alabama Reflector,
"It's important, especially for somebody under a death penalty, to have his case looked at."
The brief does not take a position on DeForest's guilt, but demands a fair and full reexamination of the facts.
It's a bit of a reverse Menendez situation, yeah. Where this case, the DA came in and was like, oh, holy shit, this was badly done. Mm-hmm. And now so many other former prosecutors, law enforcement have said, we've all reviewed it too. He's right. It is very badly done. And the attorney general is like, nope, nope, nope.
Sometimes people just choose to die on a hill for the sake of not admitting they're wrong.
And it's like, you're choosing and you're metaphorically dying on a hill while an actual human person, mm-hmm. is going to die.
Yeah.
Marcellus Williams.
Not to mention, he's been in prison for 25 years.
Yes, you've stolen him away from his kids.
Yeah.
Certainly. Yeah, this was an egregious case.
Two additional briefs, one from the Innocence Project and another from the nonprofit Alabama Appleseed, were filed as well. The Innocence Project's brief noted that DeForest's case
bears all the hallmarks of a wrongful conviction. When viewed together, the facts expose a conviction built on a foundation that has crumbled.
The Alabama Attorney General's office argues DeForest's most recent request is a subsequent appeal and that he is procedurally barred from making such a request. Parties are currently awaiting a ruling.
It's like, if you just listen to our episode, listen to Ear Witness with Beth Shellberg, like, for the attorney general to just be like, la, 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 I don't want to hear it. It's like the lady who lied and made up a very crazy lie, like a bizarre and like unlikely lie, got paid to lie, lied about getting paid, and also lied about a bunch of other people also to get paid. Like,
Yeah, it doesn't. It seems like one of those cases that is so obvious and transparent. Like, you don't even need to be a detective to look at this and say, oh, yeah, well, clearly she was getting paid. So, but he has chosen to, for whatever reason,
just dig
to Forrest Johnson as a black man, perhaps, you know, in Alabama. I think that probably plays a huge role.
I think it does indeed. And I think also that the underlying victim, while was also black, but was a law enforcement professional. And but I'm still, I'm like, all of your colleagues, like,
yeah,
the guy who used to have your job is telling you, like, what are you doing, man? But you're right. I think it's like, well, I'm gonna look like an idiot if I switch course. It's like, then look like an idiot so a person doesn't fucking die.
Or you could look like someone who was open-minded and willing to change and gain some respect.
Yeah, you look like a hero.
Mm-hmm. One more avenue of hope rests with Alabama's governor. Late last month, Governor Kay Ivey commuted the death sentence of Robin Rocky Myers to life without the possibility of parole on concerns about the lack of evidence in the case. Supporters have urged her to look at making a similar move into Forrest's case. You can find ways to help at DeForestJohnson.com.
Yeah, I hope she'll do something. I mean, it's, I won't say rare, but it is not a frequent thing in a more conservative state for a governor to step in. And in the Rocky Myers case, his neighbor was killed. And before she died, she made a dying declaration to the police. And they said, who did this? And she said, oh, it was a stocky black man in this type of shirt. Well, Rocky happens to be a black man, but he was her neighbor and she knew him by name enough to have interacted with him. So the argument's like, she would have said, Rocky Myers, my next door neighbor, did it. Like, she wouldn't have, all of a sudden forgotten his name. So I think that is why Governor Ivey was like, you know, there's questions in the case, but she says she wants to respect the jury's decision. Certainly, but also what's right is right. Like, what kills me, to use a horrible thing, but like what really gets me about these things is they prioritize finality over accuracy. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, the decision was already made, so we don't want to undo it. I'm like, but we all know we're killing an innocent person, right? And they're like, yeah, we know that. It's just like, it was like already decided. So, and I'm like, your entire job as governor is that you could say no.
Yeah. A lot of things were already decided and have been changed over the years. So
We change laws.
We can change this one too.
Certainly.
And
yeah,
juries
especially.
Get it wrong. And they might not have had all of the evidence. And they may have had biased evidence. So it's not their fault that they convicted him on, you know, evidence that wasn't true.
Exactly. Or like the check wasn't the check that proved that the witness was lying was not available until 2001 because it was purposefully hidden. So like when you have stuff like that, a new trial is the right thing because there you go. You as the governor, you as the attorney general, you don't want to have it on your shoulders that you freed a killer. Fine. Then give them a new fucking trial.
Yeah.
And then if 12 of their peers looks at this holistic picture of the evidence, first of all, they're not going to convict. But if they did, they did.
Yeah.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar, our exclusive snack sponsor. IQ Bar is the better-for-you plant protein-based snacks made with brain-boosting nutrients to refuel, nourish, and satisfy hunger without the sugar crash.
IQ Bar's plant-based protein bars are made with high-quality ingredients to support both body and brain, and they're completely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners, making them a clean, natural snack you can feel good about anytime. With 9 delicious, and I'm telling you, delicious flavors.
They're so good, for real. These things are so good. You got one right there.
I literally just ate it right before we started recording. It is the Toasted Coconut Chip Bar.
That's
it's a good one. Mint chocolate chip. I have to hide them for myself. They're so good. Chocolate sea salt, banana nut, toasted coconut chip, like I said, lemon blueberry, peanut butter chip, and more. There's something for every craving.
They really are so good, and they're so filling. You can just throw them in your bag. If you get hungry out and about, my kids love them too. They're great. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are starting their days on the right foot with IQ Bars, brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees.
I've tried the whole sampler pack. The one flavor, like I said, I like the toasted coconut. I really love the mint chocolate chip. And I've learned that they're perfect for whenever I go on a bike ride, like around White Rock Lake. It's like a little over an hour. And like partway through, I want to stop and have a snack. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like peeling off my delicious IQ bar and enjoying it. I really do love these things.
They're so good.
I eat like 2 to 3 of them a day for real.
Well, they're boosting your brain. I don't feel bad. You're just going to get smarter and smarter.
I regret nothing. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products. Plus, get free shipping. To get your 20% off, text CREEPY to 64000. Text CREEPY to 64000.
That's CREEPY to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Tom Girardi, the disbarred attorney and estranged husband of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills star Erica Jayne, is now facing the final chapter in his legal downfall, delayed once more by illness and uncertainty. We discussed the pair in episodes 144 and 145. Since our last update in August of 2024, Girardi has been convicted on 4 counts of wire fraud for embezzling more than $15 million from clients. Prosecutors described his law firm as a Ponzi-like scheme that fueled a lavish lifestyle with private jets, jewelry, and the singing career of his now estranged wife. In court, prosecutors called it
a cunning fraud scheme against the injured clients he had a sworn duty to protect.
This motherfucker.
Dude, I'll never forget. I mean, that documentary, mm-hmm. The Housewife and the Hustler, just the pain that the clients went through to turn around and spend their money on Erica Jayne's bodysuits is the lowest of the low.
And lie straight to their face. And yes. And befriend them like you're a father figure and like you're giving them financial advice and helping them when you're screwing them out of what is already, they're getting paid because something heinous happened in their lives.
They swallowed literal fire because mm-hmm. their house exploded because of the gas leak. And you're holding their hand in the hospital going, the money is just like kind of delayed. Meanwhile, you know you spent it on a jet.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's like monstrous behavior, truly.
Sentencing was initially set for December of 2024, but it was postponed so the court could determine whether Girardi, who is 85 and has been diagnosed with dementia, was mentally competent to serve time. He spent roughly 6 weeks undergoing a psychological evaluation at FMC Butner, a federal prison in North Carolina, where medical experts found that he could safely serve time in the general prison population. The report concluded he did not require specialized care. Well, 85 in the general prison population. How's that private jet feel now?
Yeah, it's a lot different, I think. And we talk about like prison time and prison healthcare versus out in the free. And like, I think the second he goes into Gen Pop, that guy will last less than a month. Like,
yeah, his health is already. I mean, if somebody doesn't do something, I think he's just going to natural causes just decline so fast.
And it's like, are they delaying it because they know that? Because he's in a nursing home right now. So. He can't, I mean, they allege he can't live alone, that it's pretty bad.
Despite that, Girardi's attorneys insist he should be housed in a secure medical facility for the rest of his life. The defense has challenged the government's findings, accusing their clients' evaluators of ignoring crucial signs of decline. They describe him as a
broke, half-blind, incontinent 85-year-old man with dementia.
But that doesn't mean he was when he did all of this.
Yes, exactly. So
just because, like with Golden State Killer, okay, now you're an old man, but that doesn't absolve you from all of the horrible crimes that you did. You still have to, like, pay the toll.
Yeah, you have to serve the time. I think their argument is that he should serve it in, you know, a hospital-like setting. And I think that the evaluators for the federal prisons, like, listen, the hospital-like setting is for someone who is, like, physically incapable of moving around. The problem is dementia patients oftentimes are, like, quite ambulatory. Like, even if they don't know what's happening to them or what's going on to them, they're ambulatory. I wonder, because everybody gets dementia. Like, that's a new thing I learned, where they're like, your brain – dementia just means your dementia. Like, your brain is just deteriorating. It's what type, like, what subtype, and then how – like, do you just have regular dementia, Alzheimer's, Lewy body – down, and then you can get like more and more like severe types. So I wonder if his attorneys in an effort to get him into, I won't say like a nicer facility, but something that is not just Gen Pop prison, are really playing this, overplaying this and trying to argue like, no, they're ignoring, like, he's so bad. Meanwhile, like 6 weeks at a prison, like, I think 6 weeks is like a long time for them to see. You know, it's not like we spent 2 hours with him at 10 a.m. and he seemed fine. And it's like, well, you know, older adults tend to, like, in the evenings, they get worse, whatever. It's like, they had plenty of time to evaluate him.
Yeah, I would agree. Meanwhile, Christopher Kamen, the former CFO of Tom's bankrupt firm, Girardi Keese, was sentenced to over 10 years in prison in April of 2025 for his role in enabling the firm's fraud and embezzling funds for himself. Girardi still faces additional federal charges in Chicago, including allegations of stealing settlement funds intended for victims of plane crashes.
Yeah, that the Lion Air family is another group that is just the type of person that can lick them in the face.
It's abhorrent. And Erica. Well,
we'll get
let's
to
just
Erica.
Talk about Erica.
But truly, like the idea that the people are coming to you in their most vulnerable moments, and you see that as a chance to fund what is, I think the prosecution nailed it. It was a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
Like, you're taking money from these people because you spent the last people's money and you got to kind of pay those people something. So it's not like, well, I accidentally put client funds in my own account and I had an oopsie. It's like, we know this was, like you said, yeah, you might like have a lot of health problems now, but you were very intentionally doing these crimes. And like, nobody can take away the years of like steak dinners, private jets. Like, a person like this is probably like worth it. Like, it was worth it. Whatever. I might die in prison.
He's
but like,
85,
I'm gonna,
yeah.
Yeah. I've had my life. I had my young wife. I had my jets. I got to be on TV. Like, that's a nasty soul. Like, yeah. That's crazy. Crazy business.
Girardi's estranged ex-wife, Erica Jane, broke her silence on his ongoing legal battles and made it clear that their relationship is over in every sense. During the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion in April, Erica was asked by host Andy Cohen whether she ever thinks of visiting Girardi. Erica responded bluntly.
I thought of visiting, this is going to sound cold, but when he passes away.
She added.
There's nothing to say to this person because he's not talking clearly. He's not there, so there's nothing for us to say to one another.
Well, that would go to his teams that he's just not fit to be in general population.
And then the question then becomes, does it benefit you if he has dementia? And does it benefit him if he's not thinking clearly? And if so, does it benefit everybody that you're going on TV saying this? Or it's true and he really is very badly off.
Erica filed for divorce in November of 2020, just 1 month before the couple's legal troubles exploded into public view. Both were accused of embezzlement and fraud, though Erica was ultimately dismissed from the case in January of 2022. Still, the questions have lingered. When asked about Girardi's guilt, she kept her response matter-of-fact, saying,
it doesn't really matter what I think. The law does. That's really where it is.
Cohen also pressed her on why their divorce still hasn't been finalized. Erica answered,
I don't have an answer other than my divorce attorney reached out to me the other day and was like, we need to get on this. That was the lowest of my problems. Like, what difference does it make? Divorcing an incompetent person? I really don't know how that works.
Well, I would say it makes a difference because you're probably still somehow linked to all of his assets if you're married.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, she was going through it with the bankruptcy, too, and like getting certain things either taken or she gets to keep. But you're right. I wondered, like, as far as once everything has been drained and paid back in bankruptcy, if there was anything that still remained and then you want to divide that like a marital asset, you're right. Or what happens if that person dies?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
She's going to visit him when he passes to also hear what is read in that will.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd be counting down the days if I was her too, because this, I mean, certainly it is taking a toll on her reputation, if not personally.
For sure. Reflecting on the toll the past few years have taken, Erica admitted to darker moments, saying of her Housewives co-stars,
these women have known me being married and holding up the walls of a crumbling marriage and just shambles and legal scandals and all this stuff. Then going through a dark period where I was mad and drinking and acting a fool and being mean to everybody. Now, you see me emerge.
Despite the public collapse of her personal and professional life, Erica said there was one silver lining.
The one thing I gained out of all this was a closer relationship with my child. If that's what it took to lose everything and really strengthen my bond with my son, fine.
Honestly, that is probably a huge gift that you were given that you didn't even know what, you know, who could have predicted that, but a relationship with your kid is priceless. So if, you know, she lost a bunch of materialistic things, but you gain a relationship with your son, I think that's a good attitude to have about it.
Yeah. And I think like, if that's what, I mean, if you still emerge with the one thing that means the most to you, which is your child, then, and also like we say that, you know, her career has taken a huge hit, which her career has taken a huge hit. But also, I think she's still on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She's still able to perform. You know, I think the fans that are her fans remain so. So, yeah, I mean, if you're like, I lost this guy who, let's be honest, we fucking saw on Real Housewives, was not always nice to her.
No.
And if you're willing to be like, Erica, shut up or whatever, while the cameras are rolling, I can only imagine the kind of shit that man said to her behind the scenes. So she said, you know, it sounds hokey, but it's true. Like, at least I get to have my son. And, you know, at least her family is still together, like the family that matters to her.
I think this is probably the best thing that could have happened to her because there's no way they were in a loving marriage. You know, I mean, there was money involved. It's there's all sorts of stuff. But to now have genuine relationships with people, and yeah, you're not living in a mansion, but you're also not living on the streets. You're doing okay. And you get to be your own person. You don't have to be under the thumb of this monster who is controlling pretty much everything you do because he's got all the money.
Yeah, and also, and exactly, and like she said, what it did to her personality-wise, and she's like, I was this, like, vicious, on-guard animal, like, always waiting to be attacked, and now I think she gets to be a little bit more free. So it's horrible that it had to happen to all of his victims, and I think it's, I mean, for the most part, there's been analysis of her financial records, of her, like, everything. She has not been charged. I think if the feds wanted to charge her, they would charge her. So the fact that she hasn't been charged kind of tells me that likely she was perhaps lightly aware, but I'm like, a man that speaks to her that way, she wasn't going to be like, all right, Tom, let's go over the financials together. He was going to be like, get the hell out of here and go do your dance career. And honestly, I think that's why he funded it, to get her out of his hair so he could do whatever he wanted. And was like, go fly to Vegas, have the plane, go to New York, have a glam squad, do whatever you want, so that he could be at Girardi Keys with the guy that did get convicted, his you know, colleague that was helping him move money, like, because they knew what was going on.
And that is a fun lifestyle for a while. Yeah. And then you realize how empty it really is.
Exactly.
And also, if you know where the money's coming from, then that's got to be a tough pill to swallow.
Truly, like, you're... At the time, you're just like, he's just a really good lawyer. And it made sense because he was taking these huge, you know, internationally known cases, Lion Air and the PG&E explosion. So I think a lay person perhaps would not know. You don't make, if it's a $40 million, you know, let's be mathematically, a $30 million judgment and he gets a third of it, he should not have $25 million of a $30 million judgment. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think she just perhaps did not know all of that and was in her own little world with the Real Housewives.
After the reunion and just ahead of a May 2025 evidentiary hearing that was set to finalize his sentence, Girardi was hospitalized for liver dysfunction. According to filings, he was taken by ambulance from his Orange County nursing home to a hospital emergency room, where he remains admitted. Judge Josephine Staten vacated the hearing and rescheduled it for early June.
So they still have time, but right before he was supposed to decide where he was going to be incarcerated, he had to go to the hospital. So
I got a prediction
that he doesn't make
it. I don't think he makes it.
I don't think he makes it to prison. Yeah.
No, I think it sounds like he genuinely has health problems, which isn't surprising. Yeah. He's 85 years old. So, and also the stress of knowing what's coming is going to exacerbate it. I don't think he's going to make it to that.
No, definitely not. But we'll keep an eye out for the rescheduled hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Sinister Hood will be right back. Sinister Hood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
And finally, we look to the skies and what some say lies beyond them. In November of 2024, Congress held public hearings examining a secretive Pentagon initiative known as Immaculate Constellation, which we covered in episodes 320 and 321. This alleged UAP monitoring program was first brought to public attention by journalist Michael Schellenberger, who cited multiple intelligence community whistleblowers. In the months following the November 2024 hearings, investigative journalist Ross Coulthart reported on a private research group called Skywatcher, led by Air Force veteran Jake Barber. The group claims to have developed a so-called, quote, electromechanical dog whistle that can summon UAPs. Using it, they reported captured footage of several unidentified craft, including one shaped like a jellyfish. Coulthart noted that the Pentagon's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Offices, or AARO, visited Skywatcher's testing range, indicating a growing government interest in private UAP research initiatives.
I like Ross Coulthart because he was like, all right, let's hear about it. And then, yeah, they say they can call them, which I'm interested. And I'm sure the government...
I need the whistle. How do we get one of these?
Can I order it from TikTok Shop? That's what I want to know next.
However, agencies have yet to share any findings publicly. Coulthart reported to News Nation that
there are active efforts inside the U.S. government to conceal the existence of recovered non-human technology.
And that the cover-up extends across decades and multiple agencies. Schellenberger recently echoed the sentiment, telling News Nation the Pentagon is
sitting on a significant body of photographic and video evidence.
His sources have confirmed that of all the evidence collected by the Pentagon, only 1% has been made public. Even members of Congress have been kept in the dark by DOD officials. The Pentagon maintains that it has found no evidence of extraterrestrial spacecraft, as stated in a March 2025 report.
I mean, if you do the math, we have like 20 videos that are, you know, like between the Tic Tac and the things like that. To think that there's 99% more of that is a lot of stuff.
And way more compelling and convincing and who knows how up close and of what or whom.
And what it's doing and like what each of them are
or
doing.
Or beings. Who knows what you've got evidence of.
Lou Elizondo is like, there are bodies and biologics.
Mm-hmm. In May of 2025, for the first time, whistleblower Bob Thompson, a former Border Patrol agent and Army veteran, came forward. He shared a never-before-seen UFO video shot on military cameras. The clip was shown for the first time on News Nation during a news special called Hunting UFOs, The Desert Sky Mystery, hosted by Coulthart, which aired on May 11th. I haven't watched this yet.
I watched it. I love it because it's inclusive of these videos. They talk a little bit about the Phoenix Lights, which I bet we should probably do an episode on the Phoenix Lights, honestly. And given this,
like
renewed,
the Marfa Lights?
Similarly, except it was all one night in 1997. And everybody, including like, I don't know if it was the mayor of Phoenix or the governor, like somebody, like people saw it. Like it was just out in the sky. The official explanation has been that it's flares. Like it was just a training exercise with flares. But when they tried to recreate it with flares, it's not, because flares, when you shoot them off, gravity takes them and they go down.
Mm-hmm.
The videos of the Phoenix Lights, it's just in the sky, not moving. And in fact, the video of the Phoenix Lights looks very similar to the incident that the two journalists had with the Bridgewater Triangle in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And they described kind of a triangular shaped thing, but they were much closer to it with like the three lights. That's sort of what this looks like. Like it's just parked over Phoenix and just sitting there.
What's in Phoenix? A lot of land and a lot of desert.
What Ross Coulthard thinks is Phoenix is very close to Sedona. There are vortex sites, including a specific vortex that several locals have believed is a vortex that's an interdimensional vortex, and that it's been closed off because the government around it has built a secret base to protect this vortex, because that's where things fly in and out of. And the people around it have been like, we've seen this, like the mountain at night, and then a square of light appears on the side of the mountain, and then something flies out of it. So what's that?
So on my to-do list, it's get the dog whistle, book a ticket to Sedona.
Done.
Step three, whatever, just say, I'm ready to see what happens.
Like, I want to blow the whistle like that too. But blow the whistle like, you know, just out there and be like, take me, please. But it's the special includes the footage we're about to talk about, but also discussion of the Phoenix lights and the vortex. It's on YouTube for free to watch.
I got to get to Sedona for real, though. I've been wanting to go there for so long.
As I was watching it, I was like, we need to take a trip to Sedona.
You've been, right? You went to a wedding there?
I went to a wedding there, and I had like one day to like hike and look at stuff and pass by several crystal and other shops that I was like, I got to get back here.
Yeah, no, we need to go where it's just a vibes trip where we're trying to find something.
Our vibes remain open. Please choose us.
I'm just going to sit by that mountain, wear that light for 100%. 3 days straight.
We're going to both get taken, and I'm going to have a Miss Rafferty experience. Like, they batted at my titties. I don't know what happened. I did it wrong.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to have to be like, I can come, but I got to be back in a couple days because I have children.
You're like, in fact, could you just drop me off in Dallas so I don't have to fly back?
That would be great, honestly. Just teleport me right back to my bed on that Helix mattress. And they're like, Helix, we've got those too. And we're like, they're out of this world, aren't they?
Hey.
The video was taken by a Customs and Border Patrol reconnaissance plane in Arizona near the border and shows a short cylindrical object moving quickly without any visible wings or propellers. Thompson and his colleagues nicknamed it the cigar. UFO investigators who have examined the video say that for now, the object in the video remains a mystery.
And they play the video in it, and it's moving in a rapid way that
is smoke coming out of one end of it.
Not quite that, but there is a trail after it. And that's what one of the experts, I appreciate, but the smoke's coming out the wrong end. I'm like, now hang on. But I do appreciate that Coulthard went to it's called like the scientist. It's like SCU, which is like the scientist for the continued study of like UAPs, which is basically a group of retired mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, like the type of people that could have the expertise, aviation engineers that can get together and not just all go, that's definitely an alien, but instead go, okay, well, what is this? They ghost guild it, where they're like, we got to debunk what all this is before we can say it's something. So to their credit, they were like, they need to analyze it more, but their initial analysis was like, this does not appear to be any type of aircraft that we currently know exists.
The show also featured two previously released infrared videos. One was filmed by a military plane in November of 2019 and is known as the Rubber Duck video. It shows a large object shaped like a toy rubber duck flying through the sky above the Buenos Aires Wildlife Refuge near the Arizona-Mexico border. The other is known as La Bruja and was filmed over Native American land in 2021. It shows a human-shaped object flying against the wind. Both objects showed no heat signature or apparent signs of propulsion.
It is weird to see because in the footage, in the La Bruja footage, you can see people on the ground and you can see they're black in color because the infrared, black means hot, white means cold. And then you see this, what almost looks like a humanoid shape, just rocketing through it's very disturbing and white. So he's like, if it had an engine on it, we would see, you know, the heat signature. And then similar with the rubber duck video, it's white against the infrared. So it's there's no signs of propulsion.
Bruja is also a cryptid in Arizona. That there is you in go. One of our cryptid books that I read nightly.
Yeah.
And it means witch, right?
Yeah, in Spanish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So perhaps they're like filming. The witch is like, don't look at me. I'm trying to get my fly on. Like, get out of here.
She's like, I just got off my broom and I learned how to fly just without it. Let me be. Let me live my life.
Just leave me alone. But interestingly, it is at the Arizona-Mexico border where also there have been a ton of drone sightings from either cartels or adversarial nations. Mm. So these just don't move in that way. And they're not shaped on camera that way. So either it's like new drones we've never seen before or a witch and her giant ass rubber duck are just trying to
vibe. It's like room on the broom. She's just picking up all sorts of stuff.
Hop on, ducky. Let's go.
On April 29th, 2025, the House Subcommittee on Military and Foreign Affairs held a hearing to address what is called an, quote, alarming increase in surveillance activity over defense sites in response to the influx of drone incursions in late 2024. This hearing followed months of public anxiety in New Jersey and other states, where residents reported clusters of lights hovering in the skies throughout late last year. At least two sightings occurred directly above military installations.
So finally, we got a hearing on the New Jersey drone
stuff. Which kind of just fell off. It was all over TikTok. It was all anybody could talk about. And then the government wanted us to focus on something else. So we just forgot about all that. And, you know, it just kind of was like, oh, yeah, that was a thing that happened. And there were no answers.
Yeah, I think whenever the FAA said, like, it's okay, don't worry about it. It's fine. Then the news is like, oh, okay. And I'm like, no, we need to know what it is. Mm-hmm. Wait. And they still don't know what it is.
Although a Department of Defense spokesperson characterized the incidents as, quote, typical, the reports triggered widespread speculation, particularly after the White House stated at the time that the incidents were
not the work of an adversary.
However, an earlier testimony to the Senate Armed Services Committee, U.S. Air Force General Gregory Gillott said that in 2024 alone, there were 350 unmanned aircraft systems reported over 100 different military installations. He described the object's behavior as being consistent with surveillance, saying,
the primary threat I see for them and the way they've been operating is detection and perhaps surveillance of sensitive capabilities on our installations.
Congressional focus seems to have shifted from investigating non-human intelligence to increasing the military's ability to counter any drones controlled by foreign adversaries. Regardless of the drones' origins, the public and media remain anxious for transparency. As Coulthart put it in a recent interview,
the government needs to stop treating the American people like children. Disclosure is no longer a question of if, but when.
So what do we think?
Well, I think, well, this subcommittee hearing was fascinating. It answered several questions, which was, what are they? And for the most part, it seems like they are drones of the ones that have been over military bases have been the drones of foreign adversaries. It also revealed what sort of horrified me in that our drone technology and capability in the United States is ancient and so far behind, both in terms of the drones that we're operating, as well as in terms of our counter drone measures, that essentially nowadays they have drones that are just AI controlled, they're autonomous, and the ones that we can take down are ones that somebody's on the ground controlling. And so if there's no, you know, ground tether, we can't really knock them down. And Representative Luna, who
my guinea pig.
No, yeah, she was. I wish your guinea pig's probably smarter than this Representative Luna, who was like, why aren't we just shooting them down with shotguns? And the man who's like third in command of the Department of Defense was like, well, they don't actually reach that. Shotguns don't go that high.
She's like, how far do you think a bullet drops?
She's like, you know what I mean? Just shoot them down. And he's like, well, there's people live under it. Children play. There's houses. Like, we can't just do that.
It's got to land somewhere.
So the current rules of engagement state that if a drone flies over. In fact, the issue is the phraseology of this advisory that was sent out to all these military bases says if an aircraft flies over, you have to determine that there is nefarious intent. Like, you have to determine that it's a threat. And if there's a threat, then you can respond. Well, one of the representatives on this committee was like, I propose that we take out or like add the word unmanned and like clarify that you should treat like somebody who's accidentally flying their commuter plane over and being like, sorry, guys, my bad, is vastly different than like a Chinese drone that we can't even detect, much less take out easily, mm-hmm. and swarm on something like that. And so the admiral who testified kind of, he said, okay, yes, like as is, just anything that's flying over that can't be identified technically can be taken out. But it seems like there was some confusion from base commanders that they weren't sure whether they could or couldn't do that. So that's kind of the issue, is that it seems like there was some confusion. But for the most part, it's just most likely drones of our foreign adversaries.
Well, that's also something to be worried about.
Certainly, they talking about the Ross Coulthart special, they were saying that the cartels in Mexico over the Mexico border were originally using Chinese drones, which were able to be detected and shot down, but they've since transferred to French and Russian agricultural drones, which are like way bigger. They can that way bigger payloads and are much harder to take down. But one of the reps in this committee hearing was like, I was disturbed seeing the Chinese New Year display when in China they were able to control 10,000 drones with a single computer, and the amount of things that the drones could do and connect. And he's just like, we can't do that. Mm-mm. And we can't fight against that. And I was like, you're saying this out loud on C-SPAN. Yeah.
And then we're also beefing with them and trying to, you know, destroy their economy. So let's keep poking the bear of the country that has significantly more advanced technology and military equipment than we do.
Certainly, and especially both of the folks testifying at this hearing were like, the future of warfare is unmanned vehicles. Like, this is where we are going. Mm-hmm. So to see them just kind of fly over and go, maybe it's just surveillance. It's like, that's still bad.
Yeah.
Because then they can see what we're doing.
Yeah.
So still bad.
Why? I mean, you surveil something so you can get intel to then go attack it.
Yeah. And that's what at the border, they were saying cartels that take money to smuggle people, that they would use the drones, to deliver drugs, methamphetamine, whatnot, but that they would also use it to essentially try to figure out, okay, well, there's agents to the west, but not to the east. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the east, which is very smart to do. So regardless, we need to know, it's domain awareness.
Yeah.
Like, whatever it is, we need to know what's flying above us, because they can attach flamethrowers to those things now and like bullets and stuff.
And as the American people, I think we have the right to know.
For sure. So let's, like Ross said, it's not a question of if, but when. Stop treating us like we're children.
No,
because we can see them. We can see them in the sky.
We're not idiots. We're, I mean, some of us are, but you know
certainly,
what I mean.
A large swath, but even the idiots deserve to know what the hell's above them.
Yeah, we all live here and it affects us. So who are you to tell us what we can and can't know?
Truly,
who are you to say, no, this man shouldn't get a new trial, even though all the evidence points to that he should? Or who are you to try and mess with the ocean? That one's nobody's fault. I mean, it's the pilot's fault, 100%. But the search efforts, I think Mother Nature, she Mother Nature's, and you can't do anything about that.
That's her world. We're all just living in it. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. The idea is collective decision making seems a little bit better than a single few people, you know, a small group of people at the DOD going, you guys don't need to know about this. Or a single attorney general going, we're still going to kill you. I don't care what all this other evidence says. So I think listening to reason is the lesson for today.
Yeah, all of listen these to reason and go back and listen to these episodes if you haven't heard them before. And then, you know, this update will make even more sense.
Most definitely. We've got them all listed in the episode description.
Yeah. And we'll keep you updated on other stuff as well as it comes out, including more updates on these. Updates on updates. A hat updates on a hat.
And if you live in Arizona and you've seen any of these drones, or you're familiar with this, or if you know anybody who's seen the Phoenix lights, write it into Freaky Friday.
Oh, yeah,
we'd love
definitely.
To hear about it.
For sure. Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of segment, like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court, True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime, Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed, and Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input. All of these were updates from True Crime Headline stuff, so you can hear more of these types of updates over on Patreon.
And now it's linked with Spotify, so you can just see what all's on there already on Spotify, which makes it very convenient. If you're not sure what any of those are, you might want to check it out. We offer free trials where you can join for free for a week at any of the levels. Check out all the perks, and you can cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged.
If you join, you get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As on the third Thursday of every month, quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
And the third Thursday is upon us. This Thursday, May 15th, is our monthly Q&A. And so we look forward to seeing you all and partying with that community, because I love the chat crew, both on our Sunday Scaries and our Q&As. Yeah. Y'all are what makes it.
It's a ton of fun. And also, just for signing up as a free member, not even a free trial, but just a free member, you get perks too, including monthly audio bonus content. You get an archived one sent to you.
And you can head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, submit your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. Don't worry, it's still totally free. You just got to put in your email. You get access to that. You get the free audio content. Plus, there's a whole backlog of stuff for free members. And again, it's all categorized, so it's very easy for you to find.
Mm-hmm.
You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2025, where we are definitely going to see a UAP. And 100%. We will definitely have our whistle by then, too. I'm going to be up on the Lido deck just blowing the fuck out of that thing.
They're like, ma'am, where's Christy been? She's been blowing on the Lido deck. She's blowing her eyes out. Yeah, the party is not going to stop. Once we get on that ship, we're going to be there November 3rd through the 7th. It's going to be the ultimate true crime festival at sea. It's not just us. You'll also be hanging with Henry and Ed from last podcast, True Crime Campfire, Scared to Death. There's going to be live shows, parties, Q&As, all the regular crew stuff, food, fun,
Bahamas,
hanging out.
Bermuda Triangle, beaches, ocean.
Come on, pretty mama.
What did you say? Bahama mama?
Bahama? Come on, pretty mama.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Go to our website and go to the live shows, and all the info is right there.
There you go.
Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to see these sweet in-ear monitors we've got. And you can also watch clips from episodes, join live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, maybe you just want to treat yourself to a pep talk. You need a graduation gift for someone special, or a congrats on the end of the year, or a Father's Day gift. We would love to help celebrate whatever with you all. We will create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's an incredibly thoughtful gift. It is perfect for when you don't want to leave your house because it's getting to be already sweaty and horrible outside.
I walked outside earlier and then walked right back in.
Nope, not ready for this. So head over to cameo.com/sinisterhood to book yours now. Christy, where are you at online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Reverend Dr. Christine Jackson,
Larry Medley,
Tracy,
Rachel Opera,
and Patty.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We cannot do this without you. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. We hope we pronounce your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Mwahaha.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No.